Next item on the agenda is Water View Landing LLC 08-0534. Mr. Nykerk.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Grab, I think basically we have quickly filled up the December agenda. Remind me.
This one is also a review of a wetland board decision. This time, though, it's 31 freeholders of property in Middlesex County are requesting a or appealing to the August 12th decision of the Middlesex County Wetland Board to approve a revised proposal to construct an 8-foot wide by 210 foot long community pier with a 6-foot wide by 40 foot long pier head and a 41 foot long canoe and kayak launch platform adjacent to their property situated along Harry George Creek in Middlesex County. This matter was continued from the September meeting. Matter was continued to provide Middlesex County with additional time to prepare and forward the complete record of the Middlesex Wetland Board hearings on this matter. In addition to the minutes of the three meetings and the board packet, PowerPoint presentation, and audio that was previously provided at the August meeting, the Commission has since provided the available portion of the audio from the May meeting and the entire audio from the June meeting. Mr. John Halpin, wetland planner from Middlesex County, also sent us a letter dated October 31st, 2008, stating that he had been advised by the Middlesex County attorney that the signed minutes were the only documents that may be considered official under the Code of Virginia. Mr. Halpin also stated in his letter that the county does not have the manpower or funds to produce a verbatim transcript, and that per consultation with their county attorney, such a document could not be considered as official. We certainly understand the county's fiscal constraints and had advised Mr. Halpin that a detailed written summary of the hearings could be provided in lieu of the verbatim transcript. We disagree with the conclusions reached by the county concerning the completeness of the record. Section 28.2.1302.7b of the Code of Virginia states, the board shall make a record of the proceeding, which shall include the application, any written statements of witnesses, a summary of the statements of all witnesses, the findings and decision of the board, and the rationale for the decision. Section 28.2.1312b states the commission shall hear the appeal or conduct the review of the record, transmitted by the board to the commissioner. Although we do not consider this record complete, we attended and took notes at all three hearings and have listened to the audio of the hearings. We have also had copies of all of the letters of protest that were submitted to BMRC and subsequently forwarded to the board. Based on all of this, we believe we can prepare an adequate staff evaluation and recommendation. Unfortunately, that means this is going to be a little bit longer presentation on my part here. The commission can also take such additional evidence as may be necessary to resolve any controversy as to the completeness of the record. The following summary has been compiled from the minutes and the audio provided by Middlesex County, BMRC staff notes taken at the hearings in the BMRC file. The following three slides were not seen by the board but are intended only for orientation purposes. This is a USGS topographic map. Harry George Creek is circled there in red. This is in the upriver portion of Middlesex County, the northern portion of the county. This is one of the 2007 aerial photos that we use quite often. Harry George Creek is circled there. And this is a closer view of that same aerial. Project site is actually located here. This is the development that the pier is intended to serve. Actually, towards the mouth of the creek, you can also see a the remains of a channel that was dredged sometime around 1978. It's still apparent. This application originally requested authorization to dredge over 7,000 cubic yards of subaqueous material from a 4,000 foot long channel to a depth of minus 4 feet and to construct an 8-foot wide pier and a 433 foot long community pier with 18 wet slips adjacent to a common parcel in the Waterview Landing subdivision. Project was considered by the Middlesex County Wetland Board during three meetings that were held on May 13th, June 10th, and August 12th of this year. Project was revised between the June and August meetings to eliminate the dredging and all of the wet slips and to reduce the length of the pier from 433 feet to 210 feet in length. A floating pier platform was added to the pier to support the launching and retrieval of canoes and kayaks. This is the PowerPoint presentation that was presented at the May 13th meeting by the Wetland Board staff. I'll note here, during the May and June meetings, the staff person was a different person. He left before the August meeting. Halpin is now the wetland staff person. Board received a briefing from their staff person at the time, Mr. Matt Craigle. Mr. Craigle stated that he believed only the pier fell within the jurisdiction of the Wetland Board, and he recommended approval of the project, provided the pier was constructed at a height of 4 feet above the wetland vegetation and no more than 5 feet wide. He also recommended that the pier be posted with appropriate signage and that adequate trash receptacles be required. I'll move through these fairly quickly. These were the ground shots shown in the PowerPoint presentation. The pier would extend off from about where those folks are standing. Those are stakes showing the location of the pier. You do see it would cross a fringe of vegetation. Mouth of the creek is out this direction, and on actually this isn't where you would go through. You'd go around this way. Project drawings, they're somewhat distorted in this presentation. I think it had to do with the compression of the file, but it's still apparent here. 5 foot wide pier showing 16 feet of vegetated wetlands being crossed. Again, this is the original proposal. It called for a 433-foot long pier, 18 wet slips. You can see the bounds of the dredging around the pier head. This was the VIMS report on the original proposal. They note 120 square feet of vegetated wetland impacts, and the subaqueous impacts are mainly associated with the dredging. These are the highlights that were in the PowerPoint presentation of the VIMS report. In their report dated May 8, 2008, VIMS stated the pier will result in shading impacts and pollution associated with the storing and use of multiple boats. They recommended against overnight mooring unless it was authorized by appropriate agencies, and they recommended the use of garbage cans and the posting of signs limiting community rules or listing community rules for the pier. They noted that the shoreline along Harry George Creek was mostly in a natural condition, and wildlife disturbance and erosion was anticipated with the proposed additional boat traffic. Nevertheless, they stated that a community pier was appropriate because the existing waterfront lots contained extensive marshes, and multiple private piers would be expected to have a greater impact than a single community pier, provided the right to construct individual piers from the waterfront lots was waived. The VIMS report also noted several potential impacts associated with the proposed dredging and recommended the dredge cut include a buffer of 4 times the depth off any adjacent wetlands. These were the recommendations listed by staff. I previously mentioned them. Mr. Chuck Rodley of Williamsburg Environmental Group represented the applicants. The board also received opposing comments from a Mr. Fitchett, Mr. Gray, Mr. Alexander, Mr. Evercombe, Mr. Fornash, Mr. Paxton, and Mr. Fitchett stated that he was also representing a Mr. Bittner. The concerns expressed during the hearing by the opposition included pollution concerns associated with additional boats, dredging due to pristine nature and limited tidal flushing of the creek, noise and boat wakes associated with the additional boat traffic, adverse impacts on the ecosystem of the creek, including SAB, crabs, oysters, and bald eagles, adverse impacts on wetlands due to the close proximity of the dredge cut or the dredge channel to existing wetlands. Several speakers felt the channel would not maintain the recommended buffer off of the vegetated wetlands, especially near the mouth of the creek. Adverse impacts on existing piers due to the close proximity of the proposed dredge channel to their piers. They stated the previously dredged channel filled quickly, and they anticipate the proposed channel would require frequent dredging, maintenance dredging, and would add additional impacts. Several speakers questioned the number of truly waterfront lots in the subdivision. The number of waterfront lots was being used as a rationale for the number of slips originally proposed at that community pier. One speaker stated there should be no more than one slip at each pier at the pier for each waterfront lot. Mr. Paxton noted that every property owner along the creek was represented at the hearing. He also questioned the need for the proposed bathhouse if the pier were to be used by waterfront property owners. Mr. Gary stated that he was the owner of the remnant pier depicted in the plans that was to be removed. He said he planned to repair the pier and he did not want the remains removed. After some board discussion, Chairman Smither stated that the project was not properly staked as required by board policies, and he also felt the matter should be continued for a month to provide the applicant an opportunity to stake the project limits and to allow the board members additional time to consider the public comments received during the hearing. They unanimously voted to continue the meeting matter to the June meeting. This is the PowerPoint from the June meeting. During the June 10th meeting, the board again received a staff briefing from then staff person Mr. Craigle. Mr. Craigle again recommended approval of the pier with the same conditions. He also reminded the board that he felt their jurisdiction was limited to the crossing of the pier over the wetland fringe. Chairman Smither said, lengthy public comment was received at the May meeting and that he didn't want any additional opposing comments unless those comments were something new. Mr. Rodley represented the applicants and stated that he agreed with the staff recommendations. He did feel that the recommended overnight mooring restrictions should be considered and regulated by VMRC and other state agencies. Mr. Craigle said he agreed with that. Mr. Rodley also explained the community pier would eliminate the potential for numerous private piers crossing wide areas of wetlands, and he suggested a no-wake zone might be effective in reducing damage to the wetlands from boat wakes. These are the slides from the PowerPoint. Essentially the same slides presentation as the May meeting. Again, it's still proposing the community pier with 18 wet slips. This was a new slide inserted in the June PowerPoint. It was an explanation by the consultants that they believe an adequate buffer is maintained between the dredge cut and the adjacent wetlands, and that the dredge cut was relocated to avoid the remnant pilings of Mr. Gary's pier. This image was also new, and it highlights the relocation of the dredge channel off of the pier and showing a 20-foot buffer off of the adjacent wetlands. VIM's report remained unchanged, and the staff recommendation was the same. Mr. Webercombe spoke at the hearing and stated that the proposed dredge cut was close to wetlands and his pier, and he presented a photo showing a stake near wetlands along his property. Mr. Rodley apologized to the board and stated that the stake was placed in the wrong location. Mr. Webercombe also stated that he didn't believe there were 12 waterfront lots in the subdivision. He explained that 7 of the lots are located along a portion of the creek that ebbs dry at low tide. Mr. Paxton said he didn't believe the public and private benefits of the project exceeded the public and private detriments. He also questioned why the staff report presented to the board did not include all of the negative portions of the VIM's comments. He also said, based on the potential adverse impacts noted in the VIM's report, that the benefits of the project did not exceed the detriments. Chairman Smither asked Mr. Paxton to end his comments because he was becoming repetitive. Mr. Fitchett said he was concerned with the wetland and wildlife impacts. He said boaters would dump their oil and trash in the creek. Chairman Smither also told Mr. Fitchett that his comments were repetitive and asked him to sit down. Mr. Gary asked the board if additional boats would be allowed to tie up along the 400-foot pier in areas not designated as the proposed 18 slips. The chairman said he would ask the applicant about that concern, and after confirming there were no other others in the audience wishing to speak, he closed public comment on the application. Mr. Roadley then addressed the board again. He said the length of the pier and deed restrictions prohibited the construction of private piers and would reduce the potential wetland impacts. He said he didn't believe land use and boating activities were issues for the wetland board to consider. He also explained the pier was long to avoid dredging and that there was no plan to allow boats to tie alongside the pier in the areas outside of the slips. Mr. Roadley stated there were 18 lots proposed in phase one of the development and a total of 106 lots in the subdivision. And then after conferring with one of the applicants, Mr. Steve Thompson, Mr. Roadley stated that it was the applicant's intention to limit access to the pier to the owners of the 18 lots in phase one of the development. I believe this is the first time this restriction was mentioned during the review of the application. Board Member Hollingsworth and Chairman Smither asked me if the board could consider the number of proposed slips and the dredging portions of the project. I said that I thought they could to the extent that they would impact tidal wetlands. I explained that it was presumed that additional slips increased the potential for incidental impacts and that some portions of the proposed dredge cut were close to wetlands. Board Member Brooks expressed concerns with the potential environmental impacts and said those impacts would be difficult to predict. Board Member Taylor also expressed concern over the potential environmental impacts and said the impacts did not seem justified for just 18 slips. He said this creek was one of the last undeveloped creeks in the county and that he would like the applicants to come back with a scaled-back proposal. Board Member Armstead asked the applicant if he intended to minimize, how he intended to minimize wetland impacts around the landward end of the pier by people traversing the wetlands. And he asked if the county would be responsible for conducting maintenance dredging of the creek. Mr. Roadley said that that the project was not intended to provide access for canoes through the marsh, and he suggested they might be able to install some fencing to minimize traffic through the marsh near the pier. He also stated the developer or homeowners would be responsible for maintenance dredging, not the county. The chairman then stated he didn't believe the benefits of the project exceeded the anticipated detriments. He also stated that when he worked for the health department, they didn't even attempt to take a boat into this creek and added that they did not consider it to be navigable because it was so shallow. At that point, Mr. Roadley requested a short recess so he could discuss the project with the applicants. The chairman granted a five-minute recess. Following the recess, Mr. Roadley requested the project be continued to a later meeting to allow the applicants an opportunity to meet in an attempt to develop some revisions to address the opponent's concerns. The board voted to continue the matter to the August meeting. Following the vote, Chairman Smither addressed the audience. He stated the matter would be continued to the August meeting and that they would hear from the applicant regarding any revisions. He said he was not going to allow another lengthy debate on the board since the board was aware of the opponent's concerns. He said he would only allow public input at the August meeting if it was something new. This is the PowerPoint from the August meeting. On July 31st, the applicants submitted their revised proposal. The revised proposal was considered by the board during the August meeting. At the beginning of the discussion, Chairman Smither stated that extensive public comments had been received during the May and June meetings, and they were not going to receive any additional public comment on this matter. Mr. John Halpin, the new staff person for the Wetland Board, provided a briefing on the revised proposal and recommended approval of the project with the same conditions had been recommended during the May and June meetings. His PowerPoint presentation included revised drawings depicting the shortened pier and the deletion of the dredging and boat slips. This is that PowerPoint. This slide depicts the previous request. This slide depicts the revised request, including the construction of a shorter pier and no deletion of the slips and deletion of the dredging and the addition of a canoe and kayak launch. The ground shots from the PowerPoint. So the revised plan view drawing. Details of the canoe and kayak launch. This is the old VIMS report that was included in the application. A review of the audio reveals that Mr. Halpin noted that the wrong slide was in the PowerPoint with this VIMS report. And when this came up, he read verbatim the revised VIMS report that was also included in the local wetland board's packet of materials. The revised comments from VIMS were provided in a letter from Ms. Karen During to Mr. Halpin dated August 11, 2008. The revised comments stated that the anticipated environmental impacts had been significantly reduced by the proposed project modifications. They noted that the impacts associated with dredging and the construction of the spoil area has been eliminated, and that the pier has been reduced in length and width, and that the 18 proposed slips have been eliminated and replaced with a canoe and kayak launch platform. They also noted that the applicant still intends to place deed restrictions on the waterfront lots that would prohibit the construction of individual private piers. They stated there would still be minor shading impacts and possible solid waste pollution from pier users. They continued to recommend the posting of signs listing community pier rules and the use of and maintenance of sufficient garbage cans to limit solid waste pollution. They noted if motorized boats were to use the pier without permanent mooring slips, it was unclear how temporary mooring would be enforced. The staff recommendation remained the same. Mr. Roadley stated the applicants had considered the comments expressed during the previous hearings, that they had reevaluated the purpose and need of the project based on those concerns. He also stated they had been made aware of an error in the depth soundings within the creek that would have resulted in an increase of the volume of material needed to be dredged to reach the desired channel depths. For these reasons, he said the application had been revised. He said they had added a canoe and kayak launch platform on the pier to address a stated concern with people traversing the wetland area adjacent to the pier. He said there would still be a restriction prohibiting the construction of other private piers in the subdivision, and that the proposed pier would be the sole point of access for the subdivision. In response to an inquiry from Chairman Smither, Mr. Roadley stated the applicants were comfortable with the revised plans. Board Member Hawksworth stated he believed the applicants had done a great job of working with the community to address their concerns and that he felt the revised proposal was much more acceptable. Board Member Taylor stated he was still not comfortable with the project. Board Member Armstead asked if there was a ramp located in the wetlands, and Mr. Roadley explained there was no ramp. And that the canoe kayak launch was located completely in the water. Chairman Smither stated that he was opposed to the original proposal, but that the impacts had been significantly reduced in the revised proposal. The board then voted 4-1 to approve the revised proposal with the conditions recommended by their staff. I'll leave this slide up just so you can refer to what was actually approved. I'm about done. On August 18th, we received notice of appeal signed by 31 Middlesex County residents noting their appeal of the decision. We acknowledged the appeal by letter dated August 20th. The appellants contend the board erred by considering an amended application without receiving additional public comment on the revisions. They also stated that the VIMS report was only prepared one day prior to the hearing and that they never received a copy of the report or the revised application. They stated later in their notice of appeal, however, that the applicant provided them a proposed amended application one week prior to the hearing. They also alleged that the PowerPoint presentation presented during the August hearing depicted the original application in VIMS report rather than the revised application in VIMS report. The appellants also stated the board deferred action at the June meeting to allow the applicants time to reach out to the adjacent landowners and to incorporate their concerns into an amended application, and that the applicant never contacted them prior to submitting the amended application. They added that they immediately expressed a concern regarding the perceived change that allowed access to the pier by all 106 potential lot owners in the subdivision instead of the 18 waterfront property owners, and that since no public comment was allowed on the amended application, that the board was unaware of their concern. The PowerPoint presentation presented to the board during the August meeting did not include the revised VIMS comments. Apparently, there was an issue regarding transferring the revised PowerPoint presentation to a computer in the boardroom. Nevertheless, Mr. Halpin read the revised comments during his presentation, and the information provided to the board in their packet of materials included the revised VIMS comments. The board packet also included a letter from Mr. Paxton to Mr. Roadley dated August 5th of 2008 that expressed the opponent's concern with the revised pier and that it would be allowed to be used by all residents in the subdivision. The letter also states that it is their opinion that the revised proposal is actually worse than the original. And that letter is item 6-1 and 6-2 in the packet. In summary, in their notice of appeal, the appellants raised three issues in support of their request to have the decision overturned or remanded to the Middlesex Wetland Board. They state that the amended application was dramatically different than the original application and that they were not allowed to comment on the revised application, so the board was not aware of their concerns with the revised application. They state that the revised VIMS report was only received one day prior to the meeting and was not made available to the public, nor was the revised VIMS report and amended application presented in the staff PowerPoint presentation. Because of this, the appellants question whether the board had adequate access to the report prior to their meeting and vote. Finally, they argue that the board continued this matter during the June meeting at the request of the applicant to provide them an opportunity to reach out to other landowners and attempt to incorporate their concerns into the amended application. They state that no meeting was held and that they only received the amended application 1 week prior to the August 12th hearing. Because of this, they argue the board was unaware of their concern that the pier will be allowed to be accessed by the entire subdivision rather than the 18 lots in Phase 1. The board received lengthy public comment on the original application during their May and June meetings. They also had Mr. Paxton's letter dated August 5th in their board packet. Mr. Paxton's letter states the property owner's concerns with the revised proposal. Several of the board members also expressed their opinion that the revised proposal significantly reduced the environmental impacts and addressed many of the concerns expressed by the concerned property owners. The PowerPoint presentation delivered to the board by Mr. Halpin during the August meeting did not include the revised drawings, did include the revised drawings, but it did not have a slide with the revised VIMS comments. Nevertheless, Mr. Halpin read the revised VIMS comments during his briefing, and those comments were included in the board packet. We do not believe the board is obliged to present copies of the VIMS report to the public. We're also not aware of whether or not the opponents requested a copy of the revised report prior to the hearing. We are not certain why the applicants and their consultants did not avail themselves the opportunity to meet with the concerned citizens between the June and August meetings. It is clear, however, the applicants carefully considered the concerns expressed by the citizens, VIMS, and the board because they made significant changes to the proposal, which in the opinion of board and VIMS, significantly reduced the potential environmental impacts. They also forwarded Mr. Paxton 10 copies of the revised application by letter dated July 30, 2008, and requested any comments on the revision by August 6th. Mr. Paxton's August 5th, 2008 letter was in response to the revision and the request for comments. And again, that letter was included in the board packet. In light of the foregoing and after carefully reviewing the record transmitted from the board, the audio of all three hearings, the notes taken by staff during the hearings, we are unable to conclude that the board erred procedurally during their review of this application. Nor did the board decision fail to fulfill its responsibilities under the Wetlands Ordinance. Furthermore, considering a substantial amount of public testimony and written comments considered by the board, it does not appear the rights of the appellants have been prejudiced as a result of the board action. Accordingly, we recommend the Commission uphold the August 12, 2008 decision to approve, with conditions, the modified application.
Need a drink of water?
I'll get one in a minute. Do you happen to answer any questions?
Any questions of Mr. Neikert?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Robbins?
Thank you. Just one question. Were there any objections raised at the August meeting about the fact that public comment wasn't taken? I see no mention of it in the record.
I don't know that it came up during the hearing. I didn't hear it on the audio. It was discussed at length after the hearing.
Approximately how much time was spent reviewing this one specific application based on the three meetings?
During the hearings, probably four hours.
Okay. Further questions?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Tankard.
And so let me get myself straight here. It seems to me that in the first two meetings, when there was public comment, the public's concerns seemed to have been totally addressed by the August compromise, I'll call it. Is that what you see as well, or am I missing something?
The point that the appellants, and there is a representative here, but from my understanding, the point that they try and make is that during the June meeting, the applicants offered up that the pier would only be used by phase one of the development. When they went back and they made the revision in August, and that wasn't put anywhere in the application, that wasn't in the original May application, that was only mentioned during testimony at the June hearing. Then in the revision that eliminated all of the slips and made it more of a, you know, low impact community pier, occasional use by boats at proper tide type pier, they had rethought that and went back and said no, it would be open to the entire subdivision, and the appellants would have liked to have commented on that aspect of the project.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you, Chip.
Mm-hmm.
Is the appellant here, a representative? Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
You solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name, please.
Randy Revercombe. I'm here to represent the appellants.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're a member of the bar?
No.
Okay. Proceed.
Thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity, and thank you, Mr. Nykerk, for your extensive job of searching back through. Mr. Nykerk's very efficient, and I've come to know this over the last several months. We have really no problem with the way that the board handled the first application. They really did yeoman's work listening to all the adjacent landowners' comments. Some of them were very repetitive. It was a very emotional testimony at times between these guys who live in this, their own property along this very shallow, uninhabited creek. So we really have no problem with the way that the Wetland Board conducted itself during those May and June meetings. At the end of the June meeting, when it was quite apparent that the applicant was going to get denied, at the 12th hour, in a very perfect move by the applicant's agent, he asked for a recess at the very last moment, and then requested that they be allowed time to get with, over the next 8 weeks, with the adjacent landowners and discuss some of the problems that had been raised in the previous meetings. We had 8 weeks to get together, and in the first week or two, we suggested to the applicant's agent that they present some sort of document that we can use as a basis for discussion. We didn't receive any document from them until the seventh week, and at that time it was new application, which stated that they wanted the access of the pier to go from 18 lots and landowners to 106. And we thought this was one heck of a difference between the first application, even though they removed the dredging component and the deep water slips. Now we have shallow boat traffic in a 1 foot deep creek. There, I should also mention that there was a lot of distrust, I think, at this time between the applicant and their agent and the adjacent landowners due to the fact that the staking was wrong, that the depth findings were wrong, that there were many things, that the dredge cut was not measured properly. So I think there was a lot of distrust between the two parties, and I think rightfully so. So basically, the reason that we feel like it should be remanded back to the Wetlands Board is because the Wetlands Board, when we got back together, did not allow any public comment, even though they instructed us to get together and to come back and we'll hear what you have to present. When we came back, the applicant was allowed to speak, and even though this big difference in the application, the adjacent landowners were offered no time to question the application. This is clearly not equal, doesn't seem fair and reasonable that the Wetlands Board did this. So that is really the main reason we're back here. I can tell you that gentlemen, I felt quite violated sitting back in that courtroom. I felt like I was in damn Bolivia or Mexico or something. I sat there and listened to this new application get passed like that after we had been through a heck of a lot of work and time and effort in these other meetings to see that a reasonable wetland solution would come out of this thing. So I think it's only fair and equitable that you guys look at this, decide what you think is fair and how the citizens were treated, and make a decision. I don't think there's any harm in remanding it back to the Wetlands Board and having them hear it properly and to consider some of the things that the adjacent landowners would like to point out. Thank you again for your time, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Mr. Evercombe, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have one question. Asked of staff, the record doesn't indicate that there were any objections raised during the proceedings.
We were not allowed to.
Why didn't you raise an objection?
We were told you may not speak.
And no objection was raised to the fact that there wasn't any public comment taken?
Oh, yeah, we raised the fact after we were told we could not speak during the meeting.
But
there was no opportunity to object to anything.
Further questions? Thank you. Mr. Eichert? I've heard what Mr. Revicon said. What's your recollection?
At the beginning of the meeting, Chairman Smither said that they had taken testimony at the two previous hearings, and the public comment period was closed, and that they were just going to review the revised application to make a decision.
Further question as a result of my question? Mr. Schick.
Do you feel that the revised application was less restrictive and therefore not needing any further public comment?
I think, quite frankly, that the board looked at it and saw that the dredging had been eliminated, that the 18 slips had been eliminated, that the pier had been reduced in length by nearly 200 feet, and that they felt that it was a much better project, and that it addressed most of the concerns.
Further questions?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Tankard.
But did you see any, I don't see any discourse here about sort of the other, what I'll call the other side of the equation. We went from a pier that was for 18 people to a pier now that's for 106 lots.
Mm-hmm.
So this side that the public never had a chance to address, it seems to me.
Well, the interesting thing about that, and I've thought about that a lot as I was going through all of this, when the application was originally submitted, the application nowhere mentions that it's restricted to those 18 lots. And when it was originally heard at the May meeting, there was no offer that it was only going to be phase one. Everyone was assuming that it was the entire subdivision. It was only during that June meeting when the consultant, I think, heard for the first time, based on his reaction, that the applicant was willing to restrict the pier to phase one of the development, which would have been 18 lots. So, I mean, when it was originally heard in May, everybody was assuming it was for the original or for the entire subdivision.
Follow up question, please.
Mr. Tiger?
As a follow up to what I'll call public input, it's, you know, we look at the June meeting, and Chairman Smither said quickly that he didn't want any additional opposing comments unless those comments were something new. I mean, he seemed somewhat aggressive about not having more public comment in the middle meeting, I'll call it, and then followed up with no public comment at the third meeting. Do you feel some prejudice there against the public comment?
I don't know. I really, like I said, I feel like they thought they had taken all of the concerns at the earlier two meetings. I think, you know, at the commission meetings, we always seem to we'll take public comment, and if there's going to be an error, we're error on that side. They didn't take that approach this time.
Well put. Further comments, Mr. Schick.
So, So with the exception of the people that were physically at the June meeting, the entire public was under the impression that this pier was going to be available and open to all 100 and plus lots.
There was no restriction in the application or in the advertisement or anything
and,
like that.
And okay. With the exception of the 30 to 40 some people in that room. Okay. Now, the other question is in the second meeting, even though that the chairman had said that he didn't want repetitive comments, which I can understand, he did allow people to speak. But when those comments got to be repetitive, he asked them to sit down.
That's correct.
Okay.
Further comment? Thank you, sir. Anyone else here from the appellate side? Is the applicant here represented? Mr. Rodley? You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name.
My name is Chuck Rodley with Williamsburg Environmental Group, representing the applicant, Waterview Landing, LLC. Mr. Chairman, I don't have a prepared presentation given the nature of your review. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I guess the question I have is, this might be an unfair one, but as a former member of BMRC, you've seen how we operate around here, and I think Chip very characteristically described how open forum, given the three hearings that were held in Middlesex, do you believe that the public was afforded an adequate opportunity to address all concerns?
I believe Chip took adequately or addressed that matter or that comment previously in terms of his interpretation of how they responded.
Okay.
I would agree with his interpretation.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? Any other questions of Mr. Rodley?
I have one question.
Mr. Tankard.
Why didn't you all get together with the citizens of the area as they had requested and you had apparently offered to?
And offered again over the phone when I spoke with Mr. Paxton. Mr. Paxton, while very cordial, saw no need to meet again to discuss something that they had already wasted two meetings reviewing, taking time off of work and so forth, and so asked for me to prepare something to present them to comment on. Part of the delay in getting that to them was associated with a error in dredging the survey that was determined actually through the help of Mr. Nykirk, and so the surveyor had to go back out and reevaluate the bottom depths, and that was part of the delay in getting the drawings revised and so forth and submitted.
The follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Chip.
I don't know if he wants to speak or not, but Mr. Halpin is also here.
Sure, Mr. Halpin. Do you care to speak? Thank you. Good morning, sir. So I'll swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name and who you represent, please.
John Halpin. I am the wetlands planner for Middlesex County.
Do you have anything you'd like to say?
Not at this time.
Okay, thank you. Gentlemen, I think we're at a juncture. Yeah, that's right. The appellant care to rebut? Anything that's been... Okay. So that's fine. You're still under oath.
I don't think it's incumbent on the landowners or that the applicant can use the excuse that their soundings were off, and that is the reason that they weren't able to reach out to the landowners. That was their soundings, certainly not our soundings. So I think that the agent confirms the fact that we did not receive anything until the seventh week, which was no fault of the landowners.
Thank you. Well, as I was getting ready to say, I think we're at a juncture where it's like a tale of perspective. There are those that believe that in the third meeting they were not afforded adequate opportunity to speak. But then again, as the staff evaluation reads, it is clear, however, that the applicants carefully consider the concerns expressed by the citizens, BIMS, and board members, and board because they made significant changes to the proposal, which is in the opinion of the board and BIMS significantly reduced the potential environmental impacts. I guess putting myself in the position of Mr. Halpin and maybe other members of the board, they believe they had fleshed out and vetted the concerns that had been aired and what was being provided to them at that juncture adequately satisfied the concerns of the citizens. On the other hand, if you're the citizen that didn't get a chance to speak, I don't think you're perceiving it the same way. That's just my observations on a matter of matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Tankard?
I agree with your sentiments exactly. It seems as though you almost have to look at it as a moving picture in a way, or work in progress. There was progress made. I've been a protestant to projects like this and felt as though I've been excluded. And so in some ways you could look at 28.2-1313 and say that the commission, the board, wetlands board, neglected some of the rights of the appellant. But at the same time, I, quite frankly, given the compromise that the applicant has made, it seems like the work in progress bore fruit. And so I'm afraid, in some ways, I have a tendency to look to 28.2-1313, but for to remand this back to the board. But I don't see that as the case here. That's just my opinion.
Yes, sir. Further comment? I have Mr. Schick, then I have Dr. McConaughey.
I see where the Wetlands Board gave ample opportunity to discuss most of these, if not all of these issues. And the biggest one at the end of the day seems to be the how many people can actually use the pier. Of course, the pier is totally different than it was at the beginning. So I don't see where remanding this will provide any additional help in this situation to expose any more light to the public. I think that most of the public always knew that it was a possibility it could be available to the entire group. Unfortunately, I wish that they would have been able to have the opportunity just to have the last moment to say something new, and that would have kind of finished everything off in a nice, neat package. But I'd like to propose a motion to uphold the Wetlands Board decision with the conditions that were imposed.
Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
So, Mr. Holland, further discussion? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this case, I do believe the chairman should have taken some comment in the final meeting. I mean, I think it would have been procedurally more appropriate. However, when you look at the end product, it is, as staff has pointed out, responsive to the concerns that were raised by the protestants. Some of the other objections that are cited in the appeal relate to when the board received the VIMS report, and it's not at all unusual for boards like that Wetlands Board or this board to have to consider those types of reports during the meeting itself. So there is no real statutory or regulatory requirement that those be in the hands of board members ahead of the meeting. So I don't see a significant defect in the decision. Just as a footnote, I do think the chairman should have taken some comment. But
Counselor,
the ordinance and wetland statutes require public notice of an application, and obviously there needs to be public notice of the first application. There's no technical legal requirement that I can find that each subsequent revision needs to be publicly noticed. And I'm wondering if, in a situation where this commission acted as a wetlands board because a locality did not adopt the wetlands ordinance, if it heard on, let's take this particular case for instance, it had an application before it, the public commented on that application, the commission, in concert with the applicant, taking into account the comments, which, and the hearing was closed at that point, the comments of the public, agreed to a modification similar to the modification here, and basically you're compressing what happened in three stages down below into what not infrequently could happen here in one stage.
So what you're basically talking about is the cost benefit of whether you continue to receive what you need deemed to be public comment that's going to ultimately result in what the intended purpose of the initial meeting or initial hearing. In other words, it makes it better. It
could be a never-ending loop.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mr. Lane?
Chairman, I feel like the Wetlands Board erred in not allowing full public comment after a substantial change in the application was made. We might well get back, if we send it back to the Wetlands Board, we might well get back to the very same posture we are in today after a few months. But still, I'm uncomfortable with the fact they did not allow a little bit more public comment on after a substantial change. So I think they're...
Okay. Dr. McConaughey?
I just wanted to point out, from what I've seen here, Mr. Paxton seems to have been the contact point for the appellants, and he did respond and did put in his objection to the use of 106, so the board actually had that information in their possession when they made the decision. So they did have a chance to, at least in a written comment, bring that to the board.
Further comment?
I'll just add that I'm troubled that there were no public comments allowed at the last session, and I would agree with Mr. Lane.
Further discussion? There's a motion on the table by Mr. Schick. Second, was there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Holland to uphold the Wetlands Board decision. I quite honestly, as a good friend of mine said, I believe very strongly both ways. I guess what my style would be and what our style is here does not necessarily mean it's the right style, but I believe that had I been sitting there, I in all likelihood would have allowed some public comment on it. But anyway, matters before the commission for a vote. All in favor of the motion to uphold staff recommendation and uphold the decision of the Wetlands Board, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. Motion carries 6-3.